Okay, so last week we introduced this notion of Rav Kook that tshuva, the process of renewal, is returning to our inner self. And we defined our inner self as our neshama, our spiritual self, our nishmas chayim. And this neshama, this spirituality, was defined by Dr. Twersky as all of the qualities of a person that distinguish them from animal creatures. So we talked about how only human beings self-reflect, only human beings think about growth, where we were last year, where we are this year. We talked about the idea of purpose, a lot of different themes. So this morning, we're going to focus for a few moments, good morning, on the concept of time. Two dimensions on the concept of time. Because Dr. Twersky points out that animals, they don't have the same concept, at least it doesn't seem, that they have the same concept of time that we do in two ways. The second one, which we're going to talk about, relates to the concept of time across generations. Right? So we alluded to this last week. You don't have a descendant of, I think his name was Bucephalus, some horse living in Kentucky saying, you know, my great-great-great Zeta was the horse of Napoleon. I don't think they really think like that. At least that's not the impression that you get. They don't have a sense of time, but they also don't have the sense of time in a more immediate sense, you could say. Dr. Twersky points out that animals have a biologic clock, but they don't have a conscious sense of time. So if we're assuming that our neshama tells us that there's a purpose, there's a meaning, there's a reason for me to get up in the morning, there's a mission in my life, so then the time that I was allotted by the Ribono Shalom, which we don't know how long that is, our time is what he calls a spiritual concept. That's the yesod. Time is a spiritual concept. And so if you have a spiritual life, one that is goal-oriented, so time has a lot of value. Now, he points out that doesn't mean that a person never takes time for themselves in terms of self-care and recreation, but the idea that we need to appreciate time the same way that as human beings we think about things, we should be thinking about time. And this is a big nekuda when we're approaching Rosh Hashanah and the notion of renewal of ourselves, of how do we use our time. So to think about that, there's a really, really interesting, at least to me, observation that you can make about this book. This is a very important work. It was dreamed up in the late 1920s by a visionary, almost prophetic educator and spiritual leader. His name was Rav Klonimus Kalman Shapira. He later became the Rebbe of the Warsaw Ghetto, known as the Piasetzner Rebbe. But at that time, in the late 20s, he was living in this tiny hamlet called Piasetzner, which is a suburb of Warsaw. And he had a small yeshiva called Das Moshe. I shouldn't say it was a small yeshiva. He had a few hundred boys. And he was focused on teaching high school students. So he wrote a book called Chovas HaTalmidim, The Student's Obligation. This appears in, I think there are two different translations of this book, and this is what you would call in the world of education today, child-centered education. So this was a man who was living decades before his time, and he had this idea that we have to really nurture the individual strengths of each student in the yeshiva. Not just put them on a bench in a cheder and treat them like a herd. We have to focus on each student as parents and as mechanchim. The book is amazing, and I have continued to teach this book over many, many years in lots of different formats. So first he has a hakdama for parents, then he has a hakdama for students, and then he gets into the core of the book. If you were to think about what is the first topic, if you were to guess, what would be the first topic that the Rebbe would tackle in this spiritual journey for adolescents, which the truth is really a spiritual map for all of us, you could probably think of tons of different options of where to start, where to pick up. But guess what? After the first parak of the Kriya to the Talmud, and then he gives him like a pat on the back. The student, I'm with you, I'm with you. Then in the third chapter, he says, Me'ikari machlos hanefesh utrufoseim, the idea of having machlos hanefesh, of the spiritual things that we need to focus on. So the first practical issue that he deals with, it's right on your page. This you can get without even buying the book. You can find it on Sfaria free online. This is a translation by Rabbi Francis Nataf. There are several. Chovas HaTalmidim Perek Dalet, Machlas HaAtzlus VeHaHisrapus Utrufasan. The illness of laziness and laxity in its remedy.
What'd you say Atzlus HaNefesh was?
Atzlus means, Atzlus is laziness. Machlas HaNefesh. Machlas HaNefesh are the plagues of the soul, the things that hold us back. So the first one that he tackles is Atzlus, which I thought was really interesting. Really interesting. And then when I thought about it more, it kind of made sense based on my own adolescent upbringing and adolescence that I know, and the challenge of getting kids out of bed. But I think it's noveh from something much deeper, which is that if we understand that every person is a composite of a body and a soul, we have this neshama and we have this guf, the animal side and the human side. Well, if the nature of the guf, of the body, of the animal side, is to seek contentment, to be sedentary, there's a heavy element of the body. The body is physical, so it's weighed down almost, even from a physics standpoint. But the neshama, ner Hashem nishmas Adam, that's spiritual. That's not physical. So it's elevated. It's constantly moving upward, which is why the image of your neshama is the image of a flame, because the heat of the flame is always drawn up. So your neshama is kind of like being drawn up, and your guf, your body, is being drawn down through this kind of heavy, lethargic. So the more that we are spiritual, we are energized. And the more that we are physical, we are sedentary. When a person loses their neshama, what happens to their body? It becomes heavier. I've never had this experience as a Kohen, but people say, I don't know how this works exactly, but people say, I think the Gemara also has this tradition, that, and you could just test it, that a person who's living weighs less than a person whose neshama has left them a few moments before. Because the koach of movement, of being drawn upward, is lost, and all they are is a guf, is a body, a shell. So it's very sedentary. So it's not surprising then that one of the challenges of growing up is moving beyond our sedentary guf, which says, stay in bed, stay in bed, stay in bed, don't move, right? Don't move, don't move. It's very sedentary.
Well, it's not only laziness of staying in bed, but right. Motivation.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm just using that as an exaggeration. Exactly. So take a look. This is what the Rebbe writes. So, well, this is a question. Yeah. If people who retire have projects, so I'll just tell you that there was a great Talmud Chacham, a great scholar. He was a professor of Tanakh at YU for many years until he made Aliyah in the 1970s. When he did, he had 7,000 Sfarim, just saying, one of my heroes. His name was Rabbi Dr. Meyer Hershkowitz. He was best friends with my grandfather, Zichron Levracha. So when I went to visit him, when I first went to yeshiva, he was, I think, 89. And at that time, he still had a desk in the library, and a few of the librarians, the younger guys, would pick him up in the wheelchair, set him up at his desk with books. So he said to me, he's working on his sixth book, and he said, you always have to have a project in life. Always have to have something. Something to get up for, some project, something that you're doing, someone that you're caring for, something that gets you going. He says, I had a brother. His life story is amazing. It's not for today. He had a brother who was also a Holocaust survivor like him from Hungary. His brother also made Aliyah, and his brother was a taxi driver. He said, but I think at the age of 70, his brother was forced into retirement, because I think there's a rule that you can't be a taxi driver after a certain age in Israel. And he said, my brother, unfortunately, he said he didn't have a project. He didn't have a thing. So he just passed away. That was it. And we know people who They always have the next project, the next person to help, the next person to call, the next thing to do. That's the koach of chiyus, of life, of being active. Ah, okay. So the Rebbe says, look at this. Ha'atzlus, and this is so interesting because Dr. Twersky has the same nekuda in many different places. He says, he talks about how there is this machla of atzlus, that a person is lazy, and it's different from person to person. But here's the key line. Go to the sixth line. A person who is atzel, who is lazy, has tirutzim shonim lo al kol davar. He has excuses for everything. And this Dr. Twersky talks about in many of his books from his perspective as a psychiatrist. He says that the mental capacity of a person for rationalization is extraordinary. Comes Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we have every possible excuse for every shortcoming, everything. Omar Otzel Shachaba Derech Ami Be'ani Ari Bein HaRechovos. A lazy person says, I can't go out there. There's a lion on the street. The person is always a tzaddik because they always have an excuse. They always have a reason. You know why I didn't call that person? You know why I didn't make that meal? You know why I didn't go to shul? You know why I didn't say that parak tehillim? Because. So there's no growth. There's no introspection. So this is the first nekuda of time. Dr. Twersky says, if we're spiritual, then we need to utilize our time. And that if we fritter away our time with every possible excuse, then we've missed our opportunity to be human. Because interestingly, the Rebbe says later in the chapter that the nature of being human, kol avoda lefi erech hadavar hanikne nimdedes, depending on how much work it is, that demonstrates how valuable it is. And the more effort you put into it, the more you achieve, the more you accomplish. It's like the Gemara says in Sanhedrin, Adam la'amel yulad. A person is meant to exert themselves, to work, to try, to use our time. This is exactly what he describes, Dr. Twersky, about the difference between bovine contentment, right, and spiritual life. Bovine contentment is as long as we're grazing at the buffet, just hanging out, we're happy, that's all we need. And a spiritual life is much more than that. So we got to accomplish something. And the Rebbe says something that's very sharp, but it's true. The Rebbe says, let's be honest with ourselves. Later in the chapter, he says, wait a second. If you have something that you're very excited about, for whatever reason, somehow you make it your business to do it, to get there, and to be on time. Right? If, you know, Lahavdil, some people know about this. Let's say, I don't know, the Green Bay Packers are hosting the Baltimore Ravens in Lambeau Field. You plan, you get up early, you go to Romanian, you daven at the early minyan, you drive, you don't get there 3 hours late, right? So all of a sudden, you had time to get up early on a Sunday morning, right? You could make it work, you know, midday pam. So the Rebbe says, why is it that when it comes to things that you're excited about, you have time for them. You make time, right? Every time you hear someone say, I didn't have time, you know that they're not being truthful. It just means they didn't make time. They prioritized something else over this. But it's all about time. If we're spiritual, then we use our time. We use it wisely. Now, Dr. Twersky points out that we shouldn't be a slave to a clock or a calendar. We shouldn't use our calendar as a weapon against us to make us crazy. You know, sometimes people, when they go on vacation, I don't want to speak about too many people, and I'm much better now, but people who go on vacation, sometimes, at certain times in their life, they have not just a watch, they have basically a stopwatch. We have to wake up at this time in the hotel, then we have to get out to do this activity, then we have to do the next thing, and the next thing, and the next thing, and you're making everybody crazy the whole time. Right? I'm much better about this now. So that... Right. So then you're weaponizing time. You're weaponizing your calendar or your watch. He actually says, Dr. Twersky says that to some of his patients, he used to tell them, Zichron Levracha, it's amazing. He used to tell them that when you go on vacation, take off your watch. And this summer, when I had a chance to go away for a couple of days, so many times, if I didn't have to be somewhere in particular, we were just there because we were there. I didn't have to worry about Shacharis. I didn't have to worry about what time Shkia was. It was 10 o'clock in the morning and there was no flexibility. I left my watch in the car. Because you could just be without being harassed by your watch of what time is it, what time is it, what time is it, where are we going next? So that's also true. But that notwithstanding, to have a schedule, to have a plan, and this is what Perek Hay is all about in the Chovas HaTalmidim. He actually encourages journaling, writing down a plan. What is it that I'm going to accomplish? And the P.S. Setzner is so into journaling, he's very specific. He says, how long is it going to take? How long do you think this is going to take? And so he says, for example, he's talking to yeshiva boys here, but you take the example. Lamashal, you have a daf gemara. How long is it going to take you to learn a daf gemara? It's going to take you an hour to learn the block gemara. Let's say you're going to do chazar. He says, maybe it'll take a half hour to learn gemara. So then you have to make sure that you put in your schedule, that you have a plan, that you're going to allot an hour for this daf gemara. Make a plan. Write it down. And he says, if you have no reason and you were just late, then he says, you have to give yourself mussar. Gewalt! Gewalt! Was wird von mir sein? What's going to be for me? He says, you have to hold yourself accountable. He says, if you ran late for a good reason, you ran late for a good reason. But if not, you have to hold yourself accountable. He says, this is the way, in his first step, of combating laziness, is making a plan. Making a plan, having a reminder, put it in your calendar. So if we think about what the shorish of this all is that our journey of tshuva, to be spiritual beings, is to utilize our time, and that this is the time of year, Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom HaKippurim, is thinking about how do we best utilize our time. So that means we could take a little opportunity to let go of some of the excuses and take ownership of our time. And figure out where is an opportunity for us to utilize time and to hold ourselves accountable. To put a little reminder in the phone or on the calendar, at this time, in this place, I want to accomplish that. And that alone, taking ownership of your time, that's tshuva. That's being spiritual. That's Aleph. But then there's Beis. This is the macro, which kind of gives us something to aspire to even on a higher level. And that was what we started with. This idea that we, in many ways, transcend time. Unlike animals who don't have a concept of history, we have a concept of history, both past history and destiny, where we're oriented toward. As individuals, what's the arc of our life, but much bigger as part of a bigger narrative. Who are my parents? Who are my grandparents? What people do I belong to? What's my spiritual culture, so to speak? Right? That's something which is unique to human beings and we can tap into. And that helps us realize the potential that we have for greatness. Because sometimes we feel like we're living in the door of Akev, of Ikfas and the Mashiach at the last. So we're like at the bottom, the feet of history. The callus at the bottom of the heel, the Akev. We feel like, who am I? What do I have to accomplish? But if I realize that I'm part of something really special, of a chain, an unbroken chain that goes back to Sinai, then I'll realize the inner greatness that I really have. And that I'm part of a fraternity of Jews, which includes people like Sarah Schneerer, or the Lubavitcher Rebbe, or the Vilna Gaon. And we're all one fraternity. Because from a Jewish standpoint, time is not linear. Rabbi Joseph E. Soloveitchik makes this point in several places. This is one place where it's articulated. This was originally a Yahrzeit drasha that he gave in the 1940s. Every year, for many years, he used to give a Yahrzeit drasha in January and Gimel Shvat for the Yahrzeit of his father, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, who died in 1941. So one year he gave, these drashas were in Yiddish, he gave this drasha and someone transcribed it. It was published in a publication called Gesher. You see where it says on the bottom? The title was, in English, it's called Sacred and Profane. For the man of the street, ancient history is something dim and distant, viewed in the Dämmerung of the mythological coolnesses of time. All right. You know, Rabbi Soloveitchik's terminology even when translated from Yiddish. I don't know what to do with them. The man of the street has no personal relationship with, no consciousness of continuity and interdependency between the glorious periods of antiquity and the emerging present. Even medieval and modern history, from which not many years separate us, appears mythical, romantic, and elusive, a refuge for escapists. But the Jew of the Masorah has a different concept of time. Revelation and tradition erase the bounds of time. Distance in time is non-existent for him. Thousands of years may have elapsed, but he walks back and forth from antiquity to modern times. Awesome. This next line, which we're not going to focus on, but it's just kind of an important just side note that he adds, the chief success of the old cheder, although deficient in many respects, lay in the spirit of compenetration of a distant past and a dim future with an immediate presence. So what does that mean for us? It means for us that Sarah Imenu and Avram Avinu are not ancient figures who are studied in a book of antiquity who lived thousands of years ago. It means that when you think of Avram Avinu, that's, so to speak, a person who's part of your life. Because there is a compression of time. Avram Avinu. When you start Shemon Esrei and say Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, you connect to those people. And Rav Soloveitchik says you compress the time the same way that you connected to your grandparents, you connect to Avram and Sarah. You have the spiritual DNA that was bequeathed to you from Avram and Sarah, you tap into that. It becomes an animating factor in your life. It becomes present, real. I saw an awesome, amazing ha'ara. I have a collection. I don't remember where I was in Israel where I bought this book. I came across a small, like wallet size, you know, like a small, like a pocket size book of teachings from Rav Moshe Tzvi Neria, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, the founder of the Bnei Akiva. So for a little while, I stuck it in my Shabbos Talis bag and I was reading it. Not that there's too much time on Shabbos davening, but there's enough to read a little diary entry here and there. So he has an awesome ha'ara. Thought it was amazing. He says, what happens when a person confronts a crisis? He says, we have a model for this. A person confronts a crisis. They turn to their spiritual mentors and they turn to their ancestors. That's what you hold on to. When you're confused, when you're confounded, when you don't know what to do, he says, you know how we know this? From the Meraglim. The spies, they face this very serious challenge from their peers, who were great people, and from the scene that they saw in Israel. So what did the tzaddikim of the Meraglim do? Yehoshua held on to Moshe Rabbeinu, his Rebbe, and Kalev held on to his grandparents. He went to Hebron, to the Kever Avos. What would my Rabbeim do? What would my parents do? What would my grandparents do? That's a sense of history that's compressed for a Jew. Avraham Avinu is not some figure from antiquity. Rabbi Sachs on his Haggadah has a great line. He says that for Jews, we experience what he calls covenantal time. Covenantal time. It's a great Rabbi Sachs type of expression, right? Covenantal time. It's a sense, now he takes it in a slightly different direction, but it's the same idea that because we have this covenant of Jews, of Klal Yisrael, of Knesset Yisrael, which transcends time and place, we're all neshama achas, so then we have this bridge, this basic connection that creates this covenant and it shapes our identity. So Aleph is, we use time, and we need to think about our time to be productive, to fulfill what the Ribbono Shel Olam expects from us. But what do we use that time for? How do we fill that time? That's based on our personal mission. And that mission is going to be informed by our connection to this covenantal time. To think about, what are the qualities of Avraham Avinu that I have? The qualities of Sarah? What have I seen through Jewish history that people have done? And we do this all the time. And that's why, in many ways, you know, history is a great educator. If we ignore history, so then we're making a big mistake. But if we think about, how do we learn from Jewish history? How do we read stories of great people who came before us, who inspire us with their courage, their heroism, their commitment? That becomes part of us. It's not just history. It's our covenantal time. And hopefully that will help us think about what it is that we want to use our time for. And ultimately, all of this is the process of tshuva, being our spiritual human selves.